This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to step up to the plate with Jim, Steve, Fish, and former two-time Gold Glover World Series champion, Benji Molina.
A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
Ranger, that is! Into left field! Hit number 3,000! A run is scored!
Smith corks one into right down the line! It may go! Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
A high pop ball! The Clover's there! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant!
Breeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
Swing and a miss! The Cardinals are world champions for 2006.
In the air to left, well hit. Back is Craig. What a team. What a ride. The Cardinals are world champs in 2011.
Hello, Cardinal fans, and welcome to this week's edition of Ruffled Feathers right here on Two Birds on a Bat. Coming to you from the Patio Studios. Patio is the original party place for St. Louis Cardinals fans everywhere since 1998. Pre or post game, Patio's is the place to be. This show is brought to you by Innovated Companies, with a special thanks to our good friend Randy Green. Residential, commercial, or industrial, Innovated Companies has you covered. Don't forget the 15% discount for all military and first responders. The construction, electrical, or heating and cooling teams are ready to tackle any project. That's our good friends at innovatedcompanies.com. Okay, lots happening this week. A lot to cover on this show on this Tuesday. Jim is still out, so I'm still carrying the show for the next probably couple months until he can get schedule settled. But joining me today are going to be two people that I'm looking forward to talking to. One, Craig Misch. Of the podcast Swings and Mishes. He also does Fantasy Sports Network radio. The other person I've talked to several times, but not on here yet, and that would be Tara Wellman of Birds on the Black. I almost said Two Birds on the Bat, Birds on the Black. It's very confusing. She does a couple podcasts. She does Chirps with Alex Crisafulli and Gateway to Baseball Heaven with Daniel Shoptaw. Both of you, thank you for taking some time this afternoon. We got a few things to discuss. I want to start with you, Craig. It's hot in North Carolina right now. I don't want to bring that up because you're in Florida. And it's probably worse, but I'm sweating, literally in the air conditioning.
Yeah, thanks for having me, first of all. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, it was either yesterday or the day before, and depending on when this podcast airs, I'm training my son in my backyard here in Florida. I continue to train him for Little League because there is no Little League. And we've had very limited space to work with. So for the first time on Sunday of last week, we ventured out to a local ball field. And I thought we were getting there here in Florida. 9 a.m. was a good time to get started. I got to tell you, I'm still recovering from that, like days later. It is, I mean, we've had the hottest Florida on record in June of 2020 ever. So not to do 2 minutes on weather on a baseball podcast, but I totally get what you're saying here. It is really difficult. And honestly, as baseball pivoted away from spring training 2.0 in Florida, I mean, that should have been something to consider also. I don't know how they would have done it. Honestly, it is just so bleeping hot.
Okay. Now we need a report from the Quad Cities, Tara. Hopefully I got that right. Is it worse? There, I know sometimes the Midwest is sometimes underrated if you're not from there on how muggy it can actually get over the summer. But Tara, it's great to talk to you again. It's been a while since we've been on the same podcast. So how have you been? Are you holding up? I do want to talk a little bit of minor league baseball here later on. So I'll just warn you. I know you've got a soft spot for minor league baseball, and you can catch us up on what's happened there. But how have you been?
Yeah, the Midwest can be very deceiving as far as the wicked summers. And typically this is the time of year when I'm working a lot of minor league games. And, you know, when you work in the TV side of things, you know, we're there 5 hours before the game starts. So it might be, you know, 85 and relatively pleasant at game time, but at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, when we're running cables and cameras and equipment all over a stadium and it's, you know, 95 with like 80% humidity, it can be pretty brutal here as well. So we haven't reached those temperatures quite yet this summer, but the humidity kicked in this week. And as far as the weather report, I'm trying to stay inside as much as possible at this point. But yeah, it's been a weird couple of months. And I say that, and it's probably the understatement of the entire year, but that's true for everybody. And this is usually a time where so much of my life, personally and professionally, is wrapped up in baseball schedules, and to not have a schedule like at all right now is very bizarre. It's I'm not gonna lie and say that all of the time off has been enjoyable, because there's the part of my brain that keeps thinking, okay, 3 months from now this is gonna be a big problem when I haven't been working all this time. But it's, you know, we got to do what we have to do right now, and we're all just trying to figure out how to make it to whatever the end of this is, even though we don't have an end in sight.
That's right. Nothing is guaranteed. And, you know, we were talking about it before we hit record. Us that put out this content, it does become a challenge, and we've pivoted to other things. But I'm sure Jim will appreciate that I did a weather report at the beginning of this. I probably won't be allowed to do that again. I want to talk to you guys, though, because now we have players' names coming up that are opting out of the season. And I want to start with you, Craig, on this. So we have Ian Desmond, Mike Leake, Ryan Zimmerman, Joe Ross. That's all I knew of up to a couple hours ago. Are you surprised at this, that anybody has opted out? Or are you surprised that we haven't heard more?
I think we still will hear more. I don't think that this is over by any stretch. And I would not say that I am surprised at all. I thought that Ian Desmond was very eloquently put in terms of his reasoning for opting out. It seemed like it was more than just the landscape of the pandemic that was going on. And I think everybody needed to take notice of that. And, you know, certainly I would expect Desmond and Leake and Ross and maybe even Zimmerman to return in 2021. But, you know, certainly I can't speak to their personal situations and their families as to what's happening. But I think that there's a, you know, big decision to make for some of these players, because they have families with kids. And I mean, just think of the amount of major league players and even minor league players there are that have family members with underlying health issues. So there are other players out there that, you know, have this. And I saw it was reported a couple of days ago that Anthony Rizzo's decided to play. I know that he had, you know, certainly he's a cancer survivor. And I think that is a player that we'll have to, you know, sort of, you know, keep an eye on too. But I don't think we're done with this by any stretch. I think that there will be more. And then I think some players' hands will be forced as soon as they report to camp tomorrow or the next day. I think that you're going to start seeing that happening. And we're seeing in the NBA, with still weeks to go before anything gets started, players testing positive and saying they're done and they're opting out. And I think the same thing is going to happen in baseball. So we'll just have to wait and see.
I do want to get to this story around Ian Desmond and so a couple of the things he had to say as he let everybody know that he was not going to play this year. But Tara, just your thoughts on this. We have four names, and I tend to agree with Craig. You'd have to think there are going to be more. But what were you thinking as the news started coming in about Mike Leake and Ryan Zimmerman and those guys that are opting not to play?
Yeah, I think with all the talk that has gone around, in the midst of all of the negotiations that were primarily focused on the financial side of things, at least publicly, there was this underlying concern that there are very real fears of these players, not just about their own health, but about people that live in the same house or people that they frequently see because they care for their children or whatever the case may be, that these fears about them potentially endangering themselves or the people that they love weren't necessarily addressed in a lot of those pieces of the negotiation. And I think as much as we heard talk about that from players, even like Mike Trout, there are going to be more. There are going to be more players who decide that the risk just isn't worth it for a 60-game season. And that's the other piece of this, right? Is that if someone comes to camp this week and tests positive, if they have no symptoms ever, great, fine. Maybe they sit out a couple of weeks and they're good to go. But we're seeing even now these guys in the NBA that tested positive months ago are still dealing with the repercussions of it. And in a 60-game season, you just don't have that kind of time to deal with an illness that gets serious and then recover and be in a position to play again. So I tend to agree. There are going to be some players who choose not to play because of the risk. There are also going to be some players who don't get that choice. And that's just the reality of this very unconventional season that baseball is trying to manage somehow in the next couple of months.
Yeah, you know, and my thoughts around this are, you know, I was looking at, you know, at players that are on the very front end of a long-term deal and they're already going to make their money. You know, guys like Garrett Cole, for an example, Mike Trout's still in early on in his extension that he signed. But you have players like that. I was kind of curious. I'm like, boy, are they going to see 2020 as even being worth it at some point where I've already got 9 years left on a deal, you know, for instance. So I, you know, this year's, it's a loss. I'm not going to open myself up to the risk that, you know, I'm going to get paid one way or the other. So I'm going to sit it out this year. It just seems like a better decision for me. And I know every player situation is different, but I was curious to see some of these guys with the big contracts or maybe they've already made a lot of money in their career and they just don't, you know, the risk reward isn't there for them. Whereas you flip it around to other guys that are maybe in a walk year, perhaps like a Marcell Ozuna that he probably wants to get out there. So anyway, that's where my head was going with that. But I want to go back onto Ian Desmond quickly because, you know, a lot of the headlines I caught yesterday were kind of, I'm not going to say they were misleading, but they didn't put this in all in context, right? And initially, it was just kind of, I'll admit, initially for me, it was kind of like, oh boy, you know, like, you know, something else is wrong. And as I read all of his statement today, I got to say, he's probably earned a lot more fans than what he had before. And the real reason he's not coming back is family related. He has a pregnant wife. He has young children at home. And I did, and obviously, if you read what he's stated, he's done a little reflecting, and went to youth baseball and the problems he's seeing right now with youth baseball and access to baseball at the younger ages and younger levels. That's a big concern of mine for the future of baseball is just the lessening of interest. You know, it's harder to do now than it was when I was a kid. Baseball was just a regular thing. Baseball didn't have a lot to compete with. It didn't have to compete with Fortnite, didn't have to compete with Nintendo Switch and all the other choices that, you know, young people have today. Baseball was always just a thing I knew I was going to do. And it's just, I don't know. But my concern is the future generations and, you know, the access to the sport. It's hard to pull enough people together just to go play a pickup game. You know, where do you find a field? Even the recreational leagues around here are a little difficult. So what are your thoughts, Tara? I just want to start with you on just, I don't know if you've read everything that he put out, but you know, he was looking at youth baseball and getting very concerned about one, I think just access to the sport, the focus on travel teams. And, you know, you really have to pay a lot of money to go to be involved in that kind of thing. And a lot of people don't have the time or the money to do it. So what are your thoughts about this? Because my biggest concern long-term is interest.
Yeah, I did read his statement, and I think it's something that everyone who cares about baseball or kind of the place of sports in culture should read, because the reality is we can talk about the kind of X's and O's of a baseball season and who's going to play where and who makes what roster and who opts out and how that impacts the game and the dollars and cents of it all. But his sort of overarching point was this game and others like it give kids a chance to kind of escape some of the challenges in life and learn from them and grow and become, you know, better people, not just better athletes. So there's a very generalized kind of overarching theme to a lot of that is more about the people involved and not just the sport. But it also showcases how much a sport and a team and a coach and someone you can depend on in that sort of environment can really make a difference in somebody's life. So I agree. I think, look, you mentioned my soft spot for minor league baseball. This sort of ties into that because part of the reason I think minor league baseball is so valuable to baseball as a whole is that it introduces the game in a very a very close, a very personal, a very relatable way. And it's not necessarily all about the fanfare or the rivalries or the stats or the analysis. It's just baseball. And kids can watch it from the front row for a couple of bucks. And they can do that all summer. They can meet the players. They can decide that they want to go play baseball. They even can sometimes, you know, go to a camp that's put on by a team that has some of these minor league players teaching them baseball skills, all those kinds of things. So I do think it's important. I think that's part of why minor league baseball is so important. And I think as far as Ian Desmond's post, he's right. There's not a simple answer to that, but it does take an investment from the people who've already been there, the people who are at the top, to create that environment for more kids to have access. The other part of it that I think is interesting, and you know, those of you who have kids playing Little League baseball or beyond can probably speak to this better than I can, but I have talked a couple of times with Kyle Reese about the fact that, you know, kids are becoming almost professional in the way that they compete so early that mm-hmm. it does take away a little bit of that. Let's just go play baseball in the backyard that you're talking about. And then it turns into these travel ball teams and the expenses and the equipment and the sort of exclusivity of baseball that isn't quite the same thing as what Ian Desmond was referring to and how that impacted his own life, not just his career. So there's a lot to it. There are a lot of layers there. Like I said, everyone should go read it. And I know that was kind of a long-winded answer to your question, but I do think there's a lot there, and it's a lot that Major League Baseball should be considering, not just those of us on the outside looking in.
Yeah, it's a great take, Tara. And just curious your thoughts, Craig. I'm assuming you've been able to read his statement, but there's a lot there, and I have a lot of respect for one, just him as a person, just reading through this. But the reason, and I'm a dad, I have four. I still can't believe the number. I have four kids, and I have a lot of respect for. Hey, you know, right now is a tough time. I'm going to stay home, and my most important job is to be a dad for them right now. And so I have a lot of respect for that. But I'm curious just your thoughts on his whole statement and comments.
Yeah, I mean, it was very moving and interesting for me. Desmond lives in Sarasota. I lived there for many years. I was sort of trying to picture the fields that he was talking about, in the statement that he made there. And certainly he's a very well-respected player. His intent was very clear, and it was more than just opting out, but to let people know the culture of what's gone on in clubhouses and sort of opening that up a little bit more. Cheating, he mentioned as well. So, all those things are something that baseball is eventually going to have to come to grips with and get a handle on. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, the other side of this too is let's be honest here. You know, this is, you know, Ian Desmond in his 30s, not in his 20s. And Ian Desmond with four kids and a pregnant wife, not Ian Desmond, single guy, just, you know, getting ready in the big leagues. And who knows? I mean, he may have had a different perspective on it back then. And I think that's potentially the perspective on a lot of the young guys who are playing or deciding to play this season. Because I'm not going to speculate on everybody's individual situation, but there is a side of this that is financial. Make no mistake about it. Mike Leake has made a fortune of money and will continue to make a fortune of money. His opt-out at the end of the year is more than any of us will see in our lifetimes. So it does become an easier situation for some people, and it doesn't diminish what they're going through, and it doesn't diminish the possible medical ramifications from it. But to even intimate that this is not somewhat financially driven for some would be incorrect. I think it absolutely is. And, most players who are young don't have that luxury of just simply saying, hey, look, I'm done. I can almost guarantee you there are going to be players that have underlying medical conditions that are going to play because they want to get paid and they want to get to that next level and they want to play for 60 games and show their organization what they can be. So, you know, circling back to Desmond for a minute, you know, certainly I gained a ton of respect, more respect than I already had for him. But also I understand that everybody's situation is difficult, and hopefully what he did in his statement was open up eyes to, I think, other issues aside from opting out due to the health issues that could, you know, potentially drive a reason like that. It was more than that. And I think I'd like to see that come more to the forefront.
Yeah, I agree. Tara, I want to pivot to a topic I think you're probably our resident expert on. But before I do that, I'd like to thank our featured partners, starting with Mike and his wonderful crew at Adam's Smokehouse, located in Watson Road. Adam's is home to the best barbecue in St. Louis. They do big box orders, catering, and of course, in-house dining. If you want the full experience, head on down to Adam's Smokehouse, meet Mike and the gang. Decide from their awesome menu, you will not be disappointed. That's our friends at Adam's Smokehouse, St. Louis. Here's your cue. Make sure to check out our friend at KristenJacobs.com. Dr. Kristen Jacobs would like to remind everyone that every day is Skin Cancer Awareness Day. Make sure to check out her Ooh La La Anti-Aging and Wellness Center. That's our good friend, Dr. Kristen Jacobs. And finally, don't forget our friends at GatorsBaseballAcademy.com, located in both Missouri and Illinois. If you're looking for the right organization to help your youngster with the game of baseball or softball, look no further than Gators Baseball Academy and their four-pillar system. To learn more, check them out at GatorsBaseballAcademy.com. Okay, the first question I want to throw this to you, Tara, because this came on the Patterson Tire and Service text line. That text line allows us to hear from the fans. Please give our friends at Patterson Tire and Service an opportunity for your business. Patterson Tire and Service is a whole lot more than a tire store, as they also specialize in automotive repair. Give them a call at 618-797-6711 for a quick quote and set up an appointment today to head on down to 3718 Highway 111 in Granite City, Illinois, to find out why they are the best in the business. That's Patterson Tire and Service, a whole lot more than a tire store. So the question came in, and of course, it came in without a name. So it's a nameless question here. What is happening in the minor leagues this year? What will happen if development goes away for an entire year, and specifically for those who are on limited time? So this person probably, you know, just like a lot of the, you know, I'd say casual baseball fans or 95% of our attention spans taken up at the very top level of baseball, they just don't know. Catch them up on what was happening with minor league baseball. Because Tara, the problem was kind of before the pandemic even started, right? About minor league team contractions. And I know there were going to battle between baseball and these minor league baseball, the organizations were kind of fighting over almost like a forced league contraction. Am I correct?
Yeah, what's happening in minor league baseball is like a 2-hour podcast, because there's no way to cover it all in one answer to this question. But I'll try to boil it down as simply as possible. Yes, before all of this started happening with the pandemic, there was an ongoing battle between minor league baseball and major league baseball as it pertains to renewing their player development agreement. And that's something that happens every now and then. It's usually not a big deal. But in this case, the major league perspective was that they need to eliminate a bunch of minor league teams. The argument on their side keeps changing, but the bottom line is basically their take is like quantity or quality over quantity in that regard. But there were essentially 40, 42 teams that were being talked about as essentially done with. And there was a back and forth between minor league baseball, major league baseball, all those negotiations. Look, we just watched a negotiating process play out quite publicly. That was basically what was happening with this as well. There was some traction being gained for minor league baseball, and then the pandemic hit and everything went on hold. And not only that, but a lot of these minor league teams are not in the position of major league teams where they can sustain missing an entire season just from a financial standpoint. So a lot of those teams that maybe even weren't part of this equation as far as contraction goes are now in a place where they're trying to figure out how to survive a summer without baseball. And then you have all these minor league players who at first weren't getting paid, and then some of them were, and then there was kind of this public pressure from fans and players alike to continue to pay them. Major league players stepped up and were offering to pay these players the stipend that they were being given when the owners weren't doing it. So it's been a big mess. And then on Tuesday, there was an article that came out, Baseball America, saying that there's an expected announcement on Tuesday afternoon. That's when we're recording, so we haven't seen it yet. But the expectation is that the minor league season will officially be canceled. That has sort of been the assumption all along, because there's just not a good way to do what they're trying to do at the major league level in all of these minor league cities without the resources and the logistics and just the scheduling, as well as the financial strain that that would cause. So I don't know if that really answered your question in its entirety, or this question from your anonymous listener, because there's a lot going anonymous. On in minor league baseball. None of it's particularly good. And the biggest problem is that, as you mentioned, it does leave these minor league players in such a strange position now because they're missing out on a full summer of development. And we have no idea how that's going to impact their actual baseball performance, but we do know that there are going to be players who can't afford to come back next year. They can't continue to hold on to this dream without making any forward progress. And that's just the sad reality of the backbone of this game kind of crumbling out from underneath Major League Baseball, while everyone at the top is, you know, arguing about millions versus billions or whatever.
Well, and I think it's official now. This came out, I'm looking at MLBTradeRumors.com, and it was right before we jumped on, Tara, but it says 2020, it's confirmed that it has been canceled. I don't think anybody's surprised, right? We expected it to be.
No.
But I think it's official now. So, Craig, just what are your thoughts in general? Because not just about minor league contraction, but just, you know, about these guys losing a full year of development. You know, many of them, Tara, I don't know what the number is right now, but there's so many that have been released already.
Yeah.
And that's going to have a huge impact. I can't even get my head around what kind of effect that has going forward or into 21. But Craig, just what are your thoughts in general about just the state of minor leagues right now?
Yeah, I think that it's really unfortunate because it really puts kids in a pickle from last year, this year, and maybe even next year too. A lot of these kids who thought they were getting drafted and were going to have a shot to play Major League Baseball have basically had their dreams shattered. A lot of college seniors are not going to get that opportunity as well. But it's not something that surprises me, because this has been talked about for many years. My hope is that the players who are getting the opportunity to play are treated better. I know that's not a fair trade-off, because you're still taking a lot of opportunities away from kids that would have had them. But I do think that there is a little light at the end of the tunnel. I do think that next year we'll go back to a 10-round draft or a 15-round draft. And provided that we do that, I think that that will at least help the situation a little bit. But I just don't know what other expectation anybody could have possibly had in 2020 with the minor leagues. I don't even know that a Major League Baseball season is going to happen. I just didn't think it was realistic to have a minor league system, but a minor league season. But there is a potential of having some independent ball, so maybe the kids can get those opportunities there. I try to be optimistic with these situations, and this one, I know that there isn't a lot of optimism there, and it does hurt to see this happen, but inevitably this is what baseball wants. They're claiming they want to take care of their players better, and in order to do that, there has to be less of them. So we'll see if that's true.
Yeah, that's a good take on that too, Craig. And I want guys, can we talk about something fun now? You guys mind?
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right, waiting for that.
I know. I kept you waiting for a half an hour. Just want to remind everybody, you can find us on twobirdsonabat.com. Please click subscribe to the podcast. It only takes about 30 seconds. And best of all, it's absolutely free. You can find us on Twitter at Birds on a Bat Show. On Facebook, just search Two Birds on a Bat. Make sure to like our page and share it. On Instagram, you can find us at Two Birds on a Bat Show. You can also find us on lineupmediagroup.fm, home of Yo Radio. Newest streaming platform for your mobile device. Download it for free today. Craig, so we're lucky to have you on, because the Marlins and the Cardinals, not to mention we like you a lot.
Oh, thanks. but just wondering.
Yeah, no, I was holding that one.
In case you didn't know that part already.
All right, glad to hear it.
That's right. We're fortunate to have you on because, one, you know, the Cardinals and Marlins share a complex in spring training. So I'm assuming you got to see a little bit of both teams,
or at least
be around.
Yeah.
So just what were some of your impressions here? Because, you know, I've said it on this show before. People are going to get sick of me saying it. I don't know I haven't talked to Tara about this, but typically spring training is not something I'm overly excited about, because as a Cardinals fan, we generally know what our lineup's going to be going into spring training. It's not a ton of mystery. We might have some bullpen pieces that get sorted out over spring training, maybe a bench spot or, you know, a second catcher or something like that, but never anything that like gets you overly excited. This year was different because the outfield is unsettled, and we have all of these young players coming up with, you know, exciting, they've done great stuff in the minor leagues, and we're excited to see what they can do at even a major league / spring training level. To see this competition open up for one of these corner outfield spots, potentially, heck, even center field. I was really excited, but you were there. What were your impressions? What were some of your big takeaways looking at the Cardinals over the first few weeks of spring training?
Yeah, and some of it could be rendered useless at this point because we don't really know what the strategy is going to be. And there really isn't a ton of roster crunching considering you're going to have 30 players available instead of 26. Mm-hmm. So anybody who was sort of on the bubble is going to end up making the team. But, you know, the most impressive player that I saw was Kim, the pitcher. I thought that he could jump right into the rotation right away and be very effective, very deceptive. And he's a extremely fast worker on the mound. The games were very quick. The innings were very quick in the ones that he was in. And with a pitcher coming from overseas like that, it's not something that I would get people excited about in 5 years from now. Because what usually happens is the hitters sort of figure them out after a year or two. But I could definitely have seen him and maybe still see him as a big part of what they are doing. And now I'm not sure if they'll necessarily need him as much. But I think that he's going to be a good player. I think he's going to be a good pitcher. And then as far as you know, other players that I talked to this spring, DeJong was one that I ended up spending extended time with. He seemed to indicate to me that he thought that coming off the season that he had last year, that he was ready for even bigger things this year. And I know all the players say that, but DeJong is an extremely bright and thoughtful player. And usually words that come out of his mouth are pretty calculated. So that was something important to me. He feels like, I think he still plays with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, that there are 15 shortstops in baseball that get recognition over him, but his numbers stack up with all of them, which is true when you go back and look at that last year. And he basically asked me to do that. So I said, okay. and yeah, look, I mean, we were all waiting to see what would happen with Dylan Carlson, whether or not he would have made the team. And I think the Cardinals were in a situation where I think he was going to force their hand. I think he was going to be in their starting lineup, either opening day or seven games in, whatever that service time deal is. So, those are, you know, some of the things that struck me in the days that I spent with St. Louis. Again, I don't spend as much time with them as I do the Marlins, but I see the games because they play against each other so often. And again, I would love to say that all of that information is still relevant 3 months later. I'm not sure that it is, but I view the Cardinals as a good but not great team, a team that could still have very well won the division without any issue. Because of Milwaukee and Chicago not being as strong, I don't think, as they've been in the past. And, you know, the Cardinals are never afraid to make those trades. Very hard for them to sign those free agents without overpaying, but they always mm-hmm. seem to be able to pull off a trade or two. And that's kind of the way that I saw them going into the year.
Yeah, Tara, just your thoughts. I know that, you know, like me, you could have been watching a few more games than what you typically do in spring training. Hell, I don't know. Maybe you watch them all, but I know I don't. It's tough for me. I'm more one that what I miss most about the game right now is not just watching it at night, but even when I'm busy, it's just on in the background and I can hear Danny Mac, right? And yeah. I miss that. And that's what spring training served for me in previous years. But I was paying more attention this year because of some of the names that Craig just mentioned. But what were your thoughts, at least to the point we had to stop?
Yeah, it's funny. I think I've paid a little more attention the last couple of years than I did this year. But on the Chirps podcast that I do with Alex Crisafulli, he doesn't pay attention to spring training at all. And it sort of became a running joke that he was like, baseball's not back. Baseball hasn't started. What are you talking about? And then all of a sudden, when we didn't have baseball for 3 months, he was like, I should have watched every game. So you take it for granted, maybe a little bit, just to see guys out on the field and hear the crack of the bat and all those things. But, you know, I keep saying this and maybe it sounds a little bit repetitive at this point, but man, I'm just so excited about what Jack Flaherty is becoming. And that was true before all of a sudden we saw this very public and outspoken version of Jack Flaherty. I was just talking about what he was kind of as a starting pitcher. And at that time in the spring, I was really looking forward to seeing what we were going to get out of Carlos Martinez this year, trying to figure out what that remapped bullpen was going to look like without Jordan Hicks. Now, you know, he might be in the mix at least sooner into the games that count than we would have expected with a full season. And that bullpen mix is so interesting to me. And even looking at it now, reminding myself of all the names that were in that conversation at the time, I don't know quite how that strategy or how that combination of players makes the most sense under the current situation with the all-out sprint to the finish and that sort of thing. Plus, you know, coming off of a shortened training camp, whatever you want to call it, and getting these guys back to game ready in some version of that, at least. So yeah, it was, this spring was interesting in that there weren't a ton of huge surprises coming down, but there were some pieces that we just really weren't quite sure how they were going to fit in and fit together. One of the things that I think was sort of responsible for that was this idea that the Cardinals were just going to be better this year by being better. And there's not really a good way to analyze that until you actually see them in real competition. Matt Carpenter being one of those guys that mm-hmm. you just have to expect more from if he's going to be able to contribute the way that I think he and the organization expect him to. So there were a lot of interesting conversations happening, but I really wasn't paying that much attention as far as, you know, results specifically or anything like that, because it was still relatively early into games being played in the spring. So this will definitely have a lot more eyes on it. I think everybody will be appreciating seeing any kind of baseball right now.
Yeah, I know anybody who's going to download this feels the exact same way. Now, what I saw were you know, three names specifically, and I don't want to exclude Justin Williams necessarily, but when you're talking Dylan Carlson, Lane Thomas, and Tyler O'Neill, I mean, they all came out swinging in those early games. And look, I get it, you know, it might not always be a big league ready pitcher on the mound, but they were all doing the job, and I think they were going to make the decision hard. I hear, you know, Craig's impression is that, you know, Dylan Carlson was going to force the decision. They were going to have to bring him up. And I try to separate what I want versus what I think is going to happen sometimes, because it's a business, right? And my gut told me that, gosh, he's probably going to start out in Memphis simply, one, because he didn't have a lot of time there last year. And I think they want to know what they really have in Tyler O'Neill. Now, that's when you had a full year. You don't have a full year right now. So let's assume, guys, that we get these 60 games in. And let's forget about the issues surrounding the game right now. But in a 60-game sprint, Tara, what I like about it is there is no time to let someone, quote-unquote, find themselves. Like, you got to put the best team out there every day. So 2020 is already crazy. So that's the silver lining I see. If we get this season in, there is no time to let somebody find themselves.
Yeah, you know, that's, I think, silver lining in one sense, but also maybe the hardest part about what Mike Schilt's going to have to do, right? Because we saw him last year take his time and be really slow with guys like Marcelo Zuna, with Dexter Fowler, with even Matt Carpenter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that strategy ultimately worked in some sense, right? Marcelo Zuna kind of did find his stride, and it was a bit up and down, but that's sort of his MO. And, you know, you saw some of those guys regain their confidence. He did the same thing with Colton Wong the year before, and kind of allowed him to work through those struggles. He's not going to be able to do that this year. There's going to have to be mm-hmm. more urgency from the very beginning. And you don't want to push that too far and go with this, you know, hot hand philosophy where everybody feels like, oh, if they don't go 4-for-4 the day before, they're not going to play the next day. And, you know, that just adds such a weird mental pressure to an already very mental game. So I don't quite know how you manage that in the sense that you're right, there isn't time to just let somebody struggle and figure it mm-hmm. out, but you also can't overreact and create a totally different problem. So for guys like Carlson, for guys like Tyler O'Neill, Lane Thomas, you know, they were all in that conversation already. The maybe silver lining of having the DH involved here is that there's another opportunity for somebody every day on the offensive side. And I don't know that that'll impact those three guys specifically, but it might if you know, Tommy Edman ends up playing at third instead mm-hmm. of in left field, they might get a little more time there. So they're definitely going to be opportunities, but they're going to have to capitalize on them in order to really claim a spot. That's for sure.
Well, I like the depth they have, right? So I think their chances somebody stepping up out of that mix in a big way is going to happen. And I tell you, the one thing Marcelo Zuna couldn't find last year, though, was that ball he jumped up on the wall to catch that ended up hitting in front of the track. That was my favorite play of 2019, and it doesn't mean that I didn't like Marcelo Zuna. I actually liked him quite a bit. That was one of the funnier things I've ever seen, Craig. I don't know if you know the clip I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do. I remember.
I was at that game.
You were at that game. Oh, boy.
I was at that game, and I watched it live, and I went from, like, very angry that he didn't make the play to then laughing hysterically for, like, three full innings. It was amazing.
Tell me they put it up on the board afterwards.
They didn't.
Oh. Well,
I don't think they did, but a friend of mine was working on the Dodgers broadcast, and they not only replayed it several times, but they also replayed the reactions of the guys in the bullpen, and they used it as the rollout going to break at the end of the inning.
That's pretty awesome. I love it when things like that happen. You know, when an outfielder throws the ball in the stands with only two outs or something like that. Those things are always funny. It just kind of breaks the series.
In Miami, he took his glove off and threw it at the ball when it was going to the fence one time.
Yeah. Isn't that illegal? Like, can you do that? You know,
I don't think you can, but I don't think he cared.
No, you know, he probably didn't know. And it's just like a little league when you tried to throw your glove up to keep the ball from going over the fence, you know, to try to.
That was it.
Yeah, that was it. Okay. That's great. That is great. Craig, catch us up a little bit on what's happening with the Marlins and, Derek Jeter, I guess he's going into his third year of ownership. And, how's that working out down there?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's still a work in progress. I think that they're one of those clubs that was really hurt by this, because when you're going through development and building up a franchise again, which is what they're doing, you want to have your young kids in the minor leagues. It was more, again, this year about minor league development than major league development. But I think that they would have been a better team this year than last. That's, it goes without saying. I mean, they lost over 100 games. So this hurt them quite a bit. And now I think that you have to maybe even consider giving them another year in this buildup back again, because they have such a strong farm system. But let's be real here. What's a farm system even worth right now with no minor league baseball? It's like, oh, great. We got the top minor league system, but nobody could play, So it's like, well, no, they can play. We'll put them on the 60 man. Oh, really? So who are they going to play against? Oh, we'll play against ourselves. It's not the same. And it would be one thing, and I know that this is something that baseball would love to have. It would be one thing if they could start up, a sort of instructional league again in Florida and in Arizona, or have an extended Arizona Fall League or something where they could have some sort of competition. But I think the timeline for all of Miami's prospects is now pushed back somewhat, and they have gotten a ton of great accolades for their last two drafts. I would guess that, I would have guessed that 2021 would have been a season where they could have been competitive and maybe tried to compete for a wild card. I'm not so sure I feel the same way about that right now. But I would say that community-wise, they've embraced what Derek Jeter has done, and they certainly have made an effort to try and erase some of the mistakes that have been made in the past. But that has not proven to bring fans to the games yet, and it seems like there are still a lot of folks who are skeptical that Miami will go out and either A, sign one of their own players to a long-term deal and use the financial dollars necessary, or B, sign another free agent and use the financial dollars necessary. When that happens, I think that will change things here. But until then, it's been a lot of look at our farm system, look at our development, and yeah, all those things have been really good, but even Derek Jeter has said, the best farm system in baseball doesn't win a World Series. So, until that happens, I think that there will still be some skepticism, but I think most people do like the direction that they're headed.
Yeah. And you brought up a couple things there, Craig, that just made me think, if the Marlins can sign even one of their own to a long-term deal, will fans start buying in again? If they, sign those free agents. And I remember a couple instances, I think when they opened that new park up, that they had signed Heath Bell and Mark Burley and Jose Reyes, and it didn't last long. And the same thing with the Stanton contract. And I don't think any of us believed that when Stanton signed that massive extension that he was going to end, that contract was going to end with him wearing a Marlins uniform. I think all of us knew that probably wasn't going to happen. And so I think the part I definitely agree with is going to have to be something that's sustained a bit longer, to just bring, I guess, whatever that loyal fan base is down there, to bring them in, other than a playoff push or a playoff run. It would be great to see. And I look around at other teams too and how this impacts them. And I don't know, they're all in a different situation financially, and I don't know the details behind any of them, but I would have to think that teams like the Rays and the A's and the Royals, that boy, when work stoppage like this, like they probably can afford less to play in stadiums that are empty. I don't know what your opinion is or what you know, but I would just have to think that teams like that, I got to think they're hurting more than.
I would think so. Like the Rockies as an example, are one of the best. They have the best ticket fans in the country. Like they show up top five every year in attendance, $200 million payroll, no chance to win this year. I mean, this is going to be a tough year for them, but at least according to the reports, it looked like they wanted to play this season. But yeah, for Baltimore, they could probably take it or leave it. I mean, I don't know that there was, they're still very early on in their development. I would say Detroit, the same. Kansas City maybe is in the same spot as Miami, but those teams just needed minor league baseball as opposed to major league baseball. That's kind of what they were shooting for. And look, in terms of those contracts that you mentioned, there's no question about that. And I think that, Stanton's contract was very much backloaded at the time that they signed him to a long-term deal. Miami did offer Real Muto a long-term contract, but it was nowhere near what he's going to get with either Philadelphia or someone else in the offseason. So, they've played around with the idea of spending some money on one of their other players too. It's my understanding. So, Miguel Rojas, they gave, a 2-year extension to, but you're right. I think that until that commitment is made, it's really hard to convince this fan base. They've been burned now at least twice. And I personally would like to believe that everything that we're seeing is the future of the Marlins franchise, but I don't know that we can be certain of that. Miami in particular, amongst all teams in Major League Baseball, I mean, guys, consider this. They were hosting the championship of the World Baseball Classic that's now been canceled. That was a huge, big moment for them that was set to come where the world would have seen Marlins Park. And don't think for a second that there was no money to be made off that event, too. I mean, basically, Major League Baseball takes over that stadium and takes over the city. And you guys saw the excitement last time around with the WBC and having the championship there. It would have been a great moment. So I'm a little concerned for Miami and the financial future of it, but it's still too early to tell. And in their minds right now, at least what they've conveyed to me when I've brought up that question, and they would say back to me, well, Craig, who would you give $100 million to on this team? Like, give me the guy that you see. And it's a fair point because there really may not be a guy on the team right now. But if they don't start getting ahead of this and start moving those prospects into team-friendly deals by overpaying a little bit and buying them out of their arbitration years, like St. Louis did with Piscotty and Grichuk and Aledmys Diaz. I mean, those don't always work out, but you have to try. Yeah, I mean, you have to try. That's the only way that you're going to be able to keep players. And the Cardinals have a similar situation to the Marlins in that degree, because players, sometimes it's tough to get them to stay in St. Louis. It is. I mean, they choose other teams when they have the choice. We've seen it happen before. So Miami's going to have to do that. And when they do, that's when we'll know.
Tara, who would you throw at Who would you throw $100 million to right now on the Cardinals roster? I think I know who you're going to say.
Jack Flaherty.
Yeah, there we go. I knew it. I want to kind of end us here on a rule change that's been talked about a lot around the internet. And I'm not talking about the DH. I think we've all given our thoughts on the DH. The National League was. I'll let you guys chime in on it, but the National League was like the last place in the world that didn't have it. It was coming. I thought it was inevitable. And I've always kind of had the attitude of, if you're going to do it, just do it, just get it over with. And we'll move on and it'll be fine in 2 to 3 years. We won't forget about it, but we'll be fine. So the DH is something, if you want to weigh in and go ahead. I think the more hot topic has been runner starting out on second base in extra innings. That's been one, especially if you're on, social media. And we always have the calmest, most level-headed fans out there on Twitter and Facebook. So I know it's really been polarizing. So Tara, I don't know how much of the World Baseball Classic that you caught that Craig was alluding to. I actually kind of liked it. I'll just be honest. I thought it was kind of interesting. And I think in the situation we're in, trying to get this many games down into 66 days, it feels like to me, kind of like the right thing to do. But I'm curious your opinion.
So I think I can answer this question about both of those rule changes, the DH and the runner on second base, with the premise that my entire opinion about it comes from what I have experienced, what I have seen, what I've grown up with, what I know about baseball, right? So I don't like the DH because I've always been a National League fan. Now, I'm not the fan that says I'm never going to watch baseball again because the DH is going to be in the National League. To me, it's not that big of a deal. It's just a thing that I'm like, I'd rather not, but okay, it's going to happen. As far as the runner on second base, the reason that I don't like it is because I went through an entire minor league baseball season last year watching them do it and do it so badly that I wish they would have just played regular baseball. It was awful. It was so, I mean, you got guys trying to bunt who have no business bunting. You have guys getting picked off at second base. You have just all of a sudden it throws everything off that's normal for how you start an inning and how you strategize what you're going to do. The first time I saw it happen in person, that game went 15 innings. It didn't shorten the game at all. It made it longer and worse. So my entire dislike of the runner on second base rule is because I watched it happen so poorly for an entire season that it kind of spoiled whatever could be good about it for me, because it just nothing about it in anything that I ever saw was actually good. So yes, I'm very much on the side of, I think it's very dumb, but I also have a bit of a brand as far as bunting is concerned, because most people do it badly and it encourages more bunting. So I think I'm obligated to hate it.
maybe we'll find that, refine that lost art of the bunt, yeah, right? Always your favorite thing to do, Craig, right? And whenever you played baseball, it's always your favorite thing to do, the first three pitches, bunt before you start swinging away. We know it's such a sexy thing to do. But Craig, what's your opinion on the rule?
Yeah, on that one, I'm completely on board with Tara. I don't understand it. I don't think it makes any sense. And it seems like they're just trying to experiment with it. And I think it'll be a failure and we won't see it again after this year. I see things differently on the designated hitter. I'm also a fan of the pitcher batting and I'm a fan of National League play, but I'm a bigger fan of keeping the pitchers healthy. And I get it. I do. I understand it at this point. We have interleague play already with the American League playing the National League. And so I do think that this was inevitable. They'll have to sort this out financially. And so yet we're in for another battle, I think, here with the players and the owners, because people think it's just so simple to just say, oh, let's just have a DH. And then when the owners come back and say, oh, that means we have to pay 15 players in baseball another $10 million a year, because now we have extra hitters to pay because they're hitting 30 home runs. I mean, that's going to be a factor. But I have to differ on that one. I do think it is time for it. And I don't want to see Max Scherzer get hurt. I don't want to see Jack Flaherty get hurt, Clayton Kershaw get hurt, something happen on the base pass. There's no reason for it. I mean, we can't keep the pitchers healthy anyway, so we may as well do our best to try and keep them on the field. So I am a traditionalist in that sense and a purist, and I've followed baseball for almost 40 years, and I get it. It's going to be hard for people to get adjusted to it, but I'm cool with it. I'm good.
Yeah, I am too. You know, and when interleague play was first introduced, I wasn't the biggest fan of it because I kind of liked that mystery of, you know, the American League and National League not actually meeting up in a meaningful way until the very end. I thought that was always kind of cool, but you know, a year or two into it, I didn't care anymore. And we've been gifted with things like seeing Albert Pujols be able to return to St. Louis last year, and you know, getting to see Ken Griffey Jr. in National League stadiums early on, you know, or at least at that point, when he was still with Seattle. You know, you didn't have those opportunities before. We wouldn't have seen Mike Trout in St. Louis. So it's brought a lot of good along with it. But I think most fans got over it quick. I know I did. So, all right, folks. I've kept you on almost an hour here, and I know that you probably have some things to move on to. So, Craig, can you please tell everybody here, like, where they can find you out there on social media and some of the things that you're going to be doing here in the near future?
Sure. Yeah, I host a show every day on video and audio for a company called Sports Grid. And you can go over to sportsgrid.com and check out our schedule for our programming. It's a sports wagering and fantasy channel, essentially. And I do a 2-hour show, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. On the audio side, audio is available where you can hear a podcast. But on the video side, It's basically the availability is on all of these new cord cutting apps, and they've been around for a while. But like Roku TV and Pluto TV and Zoom and Stir and all of those, we have our own channels on a lot of these apps. And so it's really easy to watch. And I would recommend it for people who like following me around. I don't know why you would, but if you do, that's the spot for you. And then my podcast is Swings and Mishes, not to be confused with the other podcast that stole my name and started their own thing, because mine is better. But regardless of that, we focus on the Miami Marlins mostly, although, you know, every once in a while we'll break into some other topics. And that one is available, again, on social media. You can just follow me at Craig Mish, and I post links to everything there. It's in the top of my profile.
Tara.
I am on Twitter at Tara Wellman, and that's sort of the best way to find all the other places that I am. The podcast is Chirps. You can find it by looking for the Birds on the Black podcast, and that is with Alex. We post a new episode every Wednesday, unless there's no baseball, and then we get a little hit or miss sometimes, but usually every Wednesday. And then, as you mentioned, Gateway to Baseball Heaven with Daniel Shapta, that one is every Sunday night. And then birdsontheblack.com. I'm on YouTube. You can find me all those places as well.
Yeah, you can find me out there on Twitter at TOR_Ron75. Also do a podcast called the Team of Rivals podcast, who was about the Cubs-Cardinals rivalry. Now it's kind of about anything that we find interesting. I want to thank both of you for taking some time out this afternoon to talk to me a little bit about what's going on with baseball and about our teams. And for all of us here at Two Birds on a Bat, let's go Birds!